You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
We'll get to David Sampson in a second. We urge all of you, because of how informative this hour always is, if you want some more David Sampson, nothing personal. He does it daily, and it is a perspective that you will not find a lot of other places in sports from the sports executive. But before we get to that, Mike Ryan has copious notes. He has been working the phones. He's been a Metal Arc correspondent who left Miami geographically to go to New York so he could report on what's happening at the University of Miami. What is in your copious notes? What information? You were promising on Twitter scoops, not Slater scoops, Mike Ryan exclusives.
Yeah, Dan, I actually have news that will excite Miami fans, certain specifics. So Tuesday night, there was a meeting that Joe Echevarria and Rudy Fernandez ran point on. They're Julio Franks' handpicked guys that are really driving this whole thing. Rudy in particular has taken a real active role. This meeting on Tuesday night actually sent a bunch of people scurrying, wondering if Manny Diaz was going to get fired. That's not what that meeting was about. The meeting was to simply explain to a bunch of senior staff, many of which were oddly confused and blindsided by the dismissal of Blake James, that the excuse Miami has no money no longer holds water. The problem with Blake James was he was working under the assumption that everything was a no, right? So he would have resentment towards an administration that he felt wasn't fully supporting him, but he didn't have the leadership nor the vision nor the guts to really raise hell and get those resources. So let's talk about the scoop and the resources that are coming to the Miami football program. I have it on good authority that Miami is going to pump in an additional $20 to $30 million into the football program. There's a football program that was already top 15 in the nation when it came to resources. So that is a major, major commitment. I think the university understands the need to put some numbers out there because of this notion. Everyone thinks Miami is in a good job because the narrative has gotten out of control. They don't have money, they don't have resources. Look up UHealth. Look up the success of them in the medical sector. They are going to be pumping very serious money into this, which makes things like not only Mario Cristobal possible, but also Lane Kiffin a possibility. Now, a lot of the athletic director, people that are sniffing around this job, have obvious ties to Mario Cristobal. I think one name to really keep an eye on is Jeff Purinton. He's an FSU grad, and I only mention that because FSU will probably have a role to fill there, and he might be a nominee, but he is the athletic director, the associate athletic director over at Alabama. Obvious Mario Cristobal ties there. I'm a little concerned with establishing a precedent that the head coach can kind of put all these people in place. There's a lot of ways this can go sideways. For example, they They promised to hire a national firm to do this search. Hasn't happened yet. And there are a lot of people angling. Some people that make me very uncomfortable.
When power becomes available anywhere in Miami, whether it's government or anywhere else, the number of people who start crawling toward that power is disconcerting. You got to make sure you get the right ones, because a whole lot of shady people start doing that. Look at Samson smiling. Samson knows anytime that power becomes available in Miami, it becomes like a giant deli line of snake oil salesmen that line up outside the Heck Center.
The 20 to 30 million, Mike, that makes me smile, because are you saying that that's going to make a difference in who becomes the athletic director or the head coach or which players or recruits
can come
to Miami?
Be done with his reporting before you get in here with your executive opinions, yes, please?
To answer David's question, yeah, $30 million in additional annual resources go a long way when it comes to buyouts for the staff and supporting a head coach with a big time staff. If you're head coaching, if your final candidate is indeed Mario Cristobal and you decide to give him the job, he is going to need a big time staff. Mario Cristobal, like Lane Kiffin, if something goes sideways in a game, you can rely on Lane Kiffin making an adjustment, being an offensive mastermind. What Mario brings to the table is really recruiting. Mario is a head coaching candidate that obviously needs a lot of resources for this to work, given what his ceiling is and what his background is. So I will say, Dan, that everything that we've said about the University of Miami being clueless and not supporting this this football program was kind of true. They really thought that they were doing a great job. It was scrutiny from the national media, in particular what Kirk Herbstreit did, that really started getting the attention of folks. They kind of just learned that this Miami doesn't have money thing was out there, which took them by surprise, because Miami does have money. They just didn't have a kick-ass athletic director to start getting that money. And everything is on the table in terms of what they want from this athletic director. Realignment, the ACC TV money, no longer following a leaderless ACC. They really want someone to force the issue and make Miami not like a top 15 player, like a top player that contends for national championships. They finally see that there's a trickle-down effect. When the football program does well, everything else in the university does well.
Samson, is that all you were smiling about, the 20 to 30 million? What else do you have here? As a power opening in Miami has become rare. It's rare that these things become available, but if you want to run the University of Miami program, it's available to you specifically, David. You want to throw your hat in the ring?
I wouldn't throw my hat in the ring for $20 to $30 million per year, because there's nothing more emasculating or neutering than being the athletic director at the University of Miami. I'm very clear where the athletics, I've spent plenty of time both with Donna Shalala, with Dr. Frank. I understand what you're saying, Mike, and I understand why you're saying what you're saying, but it doesn't make sense. That's not what they talk about at the board level of the university, that putting 20 to 30 million more in will make them a top four program, and that's what they want for the trickle down to the other programs. They are far more interested in the research development with capital campaigns, with the capital of the university, than they are with whether or not the college football playoff includes the University of Miami. And that sounds sad because you're a fan, but that is just the business side of how universities are run.
Well, outside of UHealth, the Frank era at Miami has kind of been marred by a tremendous backslide, not just in athletics, but also academics. They've kind of been overtaken in certain schools that they were very proud of by schools such as like FIU here within the state. So there is a reevaluation period going on across that administration. And honestly, it begins with the trickle-down economics of the football program being good, Dan.
It's funny that you say that, though, Mike, as David, and I don't know where you see this headed, but in the new age of, okay, we're going to pay the players, one of the things that's happened is, holy shit, now the coaching salaries are out of control, because Mel Tucker getting $95 million for 10 years, a 10-year guarantee of $95 million for having a season at Michigan State where he made them relevant, that is crazy money that is now being given out in amateurism. Where we were once talking about the idea of there is no money to go around. Like that is something that was being argued on behalf of amateurism, as you see. I mean, that's a ridiculous salary for a coach to be making at a school that hasn't been terribly relevant the last 40 years.
It's not actually, because the way those salaries are decided upon by the board and by the president of the universities, because they're all publicly available, so there's no secrets. It's based on the program and what the money can be taken from the program for the other parts of the school. So the football program at many of these schools is used not just to trickle down to athletics, but it's actually used to fund other improvements that go on throughout the university. And if you have a coach that can attract more money, not by winning, but attract more money by his existence on campus with donors and with boosters, that is what a huge portion of every budget is of these universities, is the private foundations, the private funding. We call them boosters, which has such a pejorative connotation, but it's actually just people who are alumni, sometimes non-alumni, parents of students. That is a huge part of the operating budget. And when you can parade around a famous football coach and get boosters and more people interested, you are worth the money.
Mike,
I'm sorry, on David's point, the fact that boosters exist is a fairly ridiculous notion, and it is just like an untapped fountain of resources that don't have to come from any other budget. It's almost as ridiculous as asking the Miami Marlins fans to pay for dismissing Don Mattingly. It's absurd.
They do pay to dismiss Don Mattingly.
Oh, that's an excellent point.
When you buy Packer, right now the Packers are raising $90 million for people who want to give a Christmas present of a piece of paper. What do you think that is being used for? Dollars are fungible. They take that $90 million for quote-unquote capital improvements of Lambeau Field, but that's just money they don't have to take from their left pocket. They can take it from their right pocket to pay these things.
Right, but when there is internal discussions about dismissing Don Mattingly in this hypothetical, you would then solicit Marlins Man to contribute additional money to fire Don Mattingly under this scenario. So it's not exactly apples to apples. On the AD front, Dan, there are two candidates in particular that I think make a lot of sense. I actually think Brian White over at FAU is pretty impressive. And obviously the Lane thing, I know that excites this show in particular. There's obviously a connection there. Lane, according to a direct source being Lane Kiffin himself, doesn't sound totally enthused with the idea of staying in Mississippi. I would really be concerned about LSU in Florida there, but it feels like Lane is willing to do an unpopular thing to an SEC school again and leave for greener pastures or bluer pastures in this scenario. I also think, and this show is obviously biased, but I do think Jim Fervola makes a lot of sense given his expertise and the fact that Alonzo Highsmith seems to have a real inside track here. And when you look at the comms background and the business ops background, the resume of Jim Fervola, the fact that he was, I believe, runner-up the last time they did an AD search, I think Jim Fervola actually makes a lot of sense, and that would excite me and probably pull me away from some troubling signs that are going on with this backwards AD search. I think Jim Fervola could really settle a lot of that.
You need to pair Highsmith with somebody. It can't be just Highsmith. He's got the football acumen and he's got the football resume as well. But I think you want him as part of a team. What were you nodding there about, David?
I was nodding at the name Jim Fervola. It's a great name. It's not necessarily the sexiest of names, but being an athletic director, I think people may not understand what their main job is. It is a hugely administrative job. It is operating a huge cost center of a university. It is in charge of there's a ton of human resources issues that the football coach and who your football coach is just one of the 55 million issues that you have on a daily basis. And Jim certainly has experience with running the gamut of those issues. The real question will be is whether the board at Miami and Dr. Frank himself, if they're looking for sex appeal and more name recognition, while Jim Fervola is a name locally, that is not a name that is necessarily will come with anything other than actual ability to do the job. So I think it'd be a great hire to actually do the job, but I worry about the other things.
Let's roll with Fervola. Let's roll with Fervola.
Roll with Fervola.
Roll.
Okay, now he's going to be hired.
Yes.
Unless, David, do you want the job?
No, not even close.
You want to talk about a lead balloon?
It is the worst job to possibly take these days is being an athletic director, especially when you've got such a fan base like they have in Miami, where the expectation is that the athletic director is going to come in. It's not like you're hiring a GM for your baseball team, and people think that's what the AD is, and that's not correct.
Why do you say it's a bad job beyond the expectation?
Because dealing with the people in Miami, dealing with the politicians, dealing with all of the people who believe that they have a hand in running the Miami Hurricanes, not right, dealing with the mics, right? Like, it's too much. The juice is not worth the squeeze by any stretch.
I've been wanting to ask your lawyerly opinion on what the worst case scenarios are for the NFL in the John Gruden lawsuit and what the best case scenarios for Gruden are. I'm assuming, without having talked to anybody who has expertise, that this is Gruden just trying to get a little bit more money that he thought he was going to be getting over the next few years. But if he is intent on actually smearing others and making a big mess, what are the worst case and best case scenarios for the people involved in this?
Well, courts don't really care when litigants are trying to go scorched earth. And so let's just pretend that's what Gruden's trying to do. That is not in any way dispositive for a judge to, he'll recognize, any judge recognizes when a litigant is trying to take other people down in some revenge crazy story. So if Gruden's only plan here is that, it won't even make it out of the batter's box. The reason why that Gruden would file a lawsuit is not because he's interested in the 650,000 emails coming out or interested in Jeff Pasch or all other people being fired around the NFL or making Roger Goodell resign. The only way that lawsuit actually has legs or merit is when he wants a financial penalty, right? He wants to collect more money because it can only be about money. He won't have specific performance, which is a remedy where you'd get your job back. He's not suing to get his job back. And what I can't believe is that when he separated from the Oakland Raiders, now the Las Vegas Raiders, that he did not have a separation agreement that was executed. A separation agreement, you know this in MetalArk, you got to do this. When you fire people, they have to sign a separation agreement in order to get their severance. And what that agreement says is they won't sue you, Dan, or Skipper. Anybody you let go has got to sign a separation agreement. And how the NFL and the Raiders did not have him do that is just staggering to me, because the separation agreement would have had a release that they're not allowed, that Gruden's not allowed to sue. So the object of his game has to just be for money, but I assume that he got his full contract. So that's why I don't believe this lawsuit has any legs whatsoever.
That makes me sad. I want to see a fight between, I want to see owners have to answer questions. I just saw Bob Costas, who's about as good at the interviewing thing as anyone I've seen. He had Jerry Jones on, and Jerry Jones gave him nothing. Like, it was the rich man's bullshit dance of just, I'm charming because I'm wealthy and I'm here, and gave him nothing. He asked him about so many difficult things, and Jerry Jones was a useless interview, and he's one of the few who's willing to actually get in front of people and answer questions. How is it that all of these rich people are able to avoid questions from a sports media that doesn't ask very many good ones of them?
Because they don't care to answer your questions. It does not in any way help their business, help the value of their team, sell more tickets. It's just a distraction. The majority of people, don't forget, are interested in fantasy and gambling. They don't care about misogynistic tendencies or domestic violence. They just don't. They want to have games to bet on, and they want a team that they can cheer for. That's it. And Jerry Jones and the other owners know it. Why would they in any way sully themselves when they know that their main market are meatheads who really don't care about it anyway?
I just saw, David, some video of former running back Zach Stacy, and I know that some of you have, you know, followed the entire journey of domestic abuse in sports, where you, it's something that you were reading about and you may have been appalled by it, but then Ray Rice happened and you got to look and see at what that looks like, and people were all the more appalled, and it became one of the great controversies of sports. Zach Stacy's video is so much worse, David, and it didn't actually knock out his ex-wife, who was in front of their five-month-old, but he hit her with two punches that were savage and then threw her into a television. So when you and I went from, man, this stinks that Zach Stacy would do something, before I saw the video, to bury him under the jail. And that never happens to me. So it just bums me out when you say they don't care and nobody cares. And it's just about how do the owners make more money? They just want to keep the meatheads entertained. I thought the one interesting thing that Jerry Jones said in that interview with Bob Costas was that Texas Stadium was built for television, that it was for the audience so that the audience could see how big and impressive Texas is, that it wasn't built for Cowboy fans.
That's so wrong. Jerry Jones, I took a tour of that stadium, and it was like a 4-hour tour, all the ins and outs, and that is an ode to Jerry. The entire stadium was built for him. When you look at what his suite is and how he engages with fans and all the different areas and all of the dig me, look at me, I'm a dig me art pieces that's all crap art. And when you look at the biggest scoreboard, it was like a penis contest, that whole stadium. And so it was not just for Cowboys fans that are in Dallas or for Cowboys fans out of Dallas. That is a revenue generating monster. And the majority of the revenue from that stadium is not subject to revenue sharing in the NFL because it does so many other things and has so many other activities that is money that he gets to keep. That makes me smile that he convinced you that this was made for TV because we care about all the couch potatoes out there.
Oh, I thought it was interesting that he would say that it would be a grandiose ego thing. I thought it was interesting, whether you believe it or not. I had not considered the idea that anybody would be building a stadium with television in mind, with the idea of how is this going? Like, you're right that it's about ego, but what he was saying is, I don't want just 90,000 people to enjoy my stadium. I want millions on Sundays to see that Texas, everything's bigger in Texas.
Every stadium is. When you have to build a new stadium, you actually have the broadcasters involved, and there's camera placements that are planned in advance. You know exactly where drones are going to be and where the HD cameras are, where the wells are. It's all done for sight lines, all done for TV, because any ballpark, whether it's 90,000 or 30,000 or an arena with 20,000, the majority of your revenue comes from the broadcast deals. For the Cowboys, the majority of their revenue, their NFL-related revenue, is their national TV deal. So, of course, that's going to be a focus for him. Yeah, that should not be a huge surprise to you.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Have you ever wondered if Chet Holmgren might be a descendant of Abraham Lincoln, or if a UFC fighter could beat an alien in a fight? You might have not, and that's okay. I probably have thought about the UFC one, to be honest. But Shea Serrano and Jason Concepcion from the Six Trophies podcast have. If you love basketball, and more importantly, if you love fun, you got to listen to Six Trophies, where Jason and Shea serve up the biggest moments from all around the NBA with their brand of unbridled joy, banter, and pop culture side quests. Each week, they hand out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities. Stuff like the Denzel Washington and Training Day trophy, given out to the player or team having the best week around the NBA. Or the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy for the team or player that just can't get it together. Plus a bunch more trophies for all the good, bad, or just plain head scratching moments from all around the NBA. This playoff season, you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Staples Center decides to become crypto.com with a deal that has no precedent, I don't believe. 20 years, $700 million for a company that is based in Shanghai. The China stuff is really problematic for the NBA. They do not like that Enes Kanter is out there as the single most unique activist that basketball has, calling out LeBron James and calling out others, demanding freedom everywhere, wearing sneakers to free Tibet and to make Taiwan feel independent. And you find yourself seeing $700 million over 20 years, crypto.com arena. Some people are attached somehow to the office manager store I've never been in. I've never been in a Staples, so it amuses me that some people are bothered by the idea that it's no longer going to be the Staples Center on Christmas because they've attached themselves to Staples. But what do you make of this deal, David?
So first of all, they attach it the way you attach yourself to Joe Robbie, right? It's just, it's the first name they knew was Staples Center from the beginning. It has nothing to do with the office supply store. But this crypto.com deal made me smile because unless they're getting $700 million up front, I wouldn't expect that that deal will live for the length of the deal. Crypto.com is doing something that reminded me back in Florida, and I've been trying to think of his name, including on Nothing Personal today, and it has escaped me. The Ponzi scheme guy who's in prison in Florida, who was the lawyer in Fort Lauderdale. What is his name?
Rothstein.
Rothstein. Do you remember what Rothstein was doing when he was making all the money? He was becoming a sponsor everywhere. You could see that he was a sponsor with the Dolphins and the Heat and with the Broward Theater for the Arts. He was all over Miami. And you were saying, how is it possible that a law firm would have this money? And when he wanted to be a sponsor for the Marlins, I actually turned him down and without knowing that he was a criminal because it felt wrong. And my corporate salespeople were angry. And I got that one right because he's now in jail. The crypto.com people are throwing around this money. Of course, teams and entities and municipalities are going to take it because it is sexy and because the numbers are so out of this world large. But the general principle rule is if something sounds too good to be true, it is too good to be true. That arena is not worth $700 million over $20, $30 million a year. It's just not close to that. And that company, and it's just not gonna be around like that. So it's a good current day deal, but when you and I are in our rocking chairs in our 80s, we'll look back and it will not be crypto.com arena.
I was reading some numbers on this, and I don't know whether it was the arena that was originally bought for $350 million, but it wasn't that long ago. I couldn't believe that number. $700 million just for a naming right ends up being something that covers you over what the cost of the arena was when you bought it.
Well, that's like saying when you sign a player to a $300 million contract, well, that's more than the franchise is worth. Why don't you just give him the franchise? That's more than you paid for the franchise.
I understand inflation, but I'm still saying that once you're getting into the game, right? Jerry Jones buys in at $150 million on the Cowboys. Once you're getting into the game, then all of a sudden you're looking up 30 years later and it's worth $6 billion.
And?
No, this is how it happens is what I'm saying. A naming rights deal that's $700 million from that you're just getting to allow someone to put their name, and it's worth it for them to put their name on it because Staples Center developed an emotional attachment. It ended up being something that was worth it for Staples.
If it were worth it for Staples, they would have kept the name and they would have matched the deal, right? It's not. There is no naming rights deal that is worth it. Now, I can hire a company, and I did, to show companies, other companies, how much value you get, how many mentions there are in the news, how many mentions, how many clicks, how many people refer to Staples Center, that now they're always going to say crypto.com, what the flow-through, pass-through rate will be, the people who will go to crypto.com and start submitting their information and buying crypto, and it's all horse hockey. But it is all done in a way to make executives feel good about the money they're spending. But at the end of the day, the reason that American Airlines is no longer American Airlines Arena is they weren't getting any bang for their buck anymore. No one was flying American Airlines because the Heat won championships in American Airlines Arena. Not one person. There will not be a person who does business with crypto.com because, oh my God, is that where LeBron plays? It's not going to work that way. But they're going to discover that. They're getting a great ego hit. They're getting a great increase and their Q rating right now, but that will go away over time and it'll go over way quickly, more quickly than they think.
So why do people keep doing it and why does the price keep going up?
Sex. That's why everything happens, right? Sex and money. Can you imagine you get to go to a party? Yeah, that's my arena. Crypto.com. That's
hell yeah.
Me.
$700 million for sex?
by the way, that's a Tuesday for some people.
Bezos got an audible groan the other day when he was at a baby-to-baby charity and he only gave $500,000. The people were disappointed that he only gave $500,000.
It is so bad to be Bezos, and I have to defend him here. Think about the number of requests. I bring it down to a level of just a baseball team in Miami. We got hundreds of requests a day for memorabilia, for money, for charity, and we're one baseball team in one city. He is the richest man in the world. Every day he gets requests. Could you please stop world hunger? Could you please make sure there's water? Could you make sure there's Wi-Fi around the world? Can you possibly get rid of shingles? And while you're at it, cure COVID. Thank you so much. By the way, where's my frickin' package? It said overnight I paid the $30 and then I get running late. This is what the guy has to deal with every single day. It is not an enviable position. There was a someone, Charlemagne the God, I don't know if you know that name, is often asked a question about whether it's better to have money or not have money, which is easier. And pretty much says in no uncertain terms, it's a much more simple life to not have money.
I can't believe that you're out here making the argument that is poor Bezos. That's not something you just did. I understand that this is a great inconvenience that people would audibly groan that you only give $500,000.
It's not an inconvenience. I didn't say that. I didn't say it was an inconvenience to him. He could give a crap that people were groaning. I'm saying it's not an enviable position where no matter what you do, you cannot satisfy not just one person, but anybody. The quote that Bezos had that I loved is, yeah, I've made a couple hundred billion, but Amazon is worth a trillion, which means someone else has 800 billion somewhere. It's split up amongst a bunch of people, but I've created that amount for the economy, for the world. When I was at Morgan Stanley, I had some clients who were janitors at Microsoft who came in early when they couldn't afford to get paid. So they got paid in stock. And these janitors, these cleaning people were worth millions of dollars because the stock did what the stock did. So I've seen wealth created, and Bezos has created a tremendous amount of wealth for a lot of people.
How often would you turn down money the way that you said you did with Rothstein? Because I would have assumed that the Marlins weren't doing a whole lot of that.
Yeah, that's the only time. I would have taken, I wanted to take money from Qatar Airways, from Emirates. I would have taken money from anybody, but I needed the money. This is funny, right? Blood money is different than illegally gotten Ponzi. And I was willing, and I look back and I am shamed at how I drew the line, because it's such a recency bias thing that when you're in it trying to hit a budget, you tend to throw your morals or change your moral compass quite often. So I drew the line inadvertently, or actually advertently, but strangely, at not anti-Semitism, but hey, if this is illegal, then I can't do it because I'm going to have to give it back. And I can't take money, use it in the budget, pay players, and then someone have to come up with it again. I knew I'd never have to take back Qatar money because however they got their money, how whatever they do, whatever human rights they violate, once the deal is approved by MLB, they could name the ballpark and I'm good to go. I'll never have to refund it.
How much were they going to give you? Was that a naming rights deal on Qatar? And where and how did that fall apart if you were advocating for it?
It fell apart because I wanted 20. I wanted to match what the Nationals wanted and what the Mets got with Citi Field, because with our budget, you can only sell naming rights one time. And I did not want to, because once a building is named, like Staples Center, it becomes known as that. And we were already in the position where Marlins Park was being known as Marlins Park. So I was up against that while negotiating with companies, which is why I wanted to get a deal done during construction, but could never get the price. Pepsi Park was the closest, but the highest they ever got was 7. And I wanted at least 10 to do the deal. So Pepsi became just a corner sponsor. But they didn't get to 20.
Do you regret not lowering your price?
Oh my God, no. Do you know why? Because Jeter overpaid for the team because naming rights was open and the broadcast deal was open. So he thought that he would get these huge deals, and he put that in his budget to show the people putting money into the team that look at all this new revenue we can get because Samson was such an idiot. So it's the opposite of regret. That's the only way among other leverage issues that we were able to get, that Jeffrey was able to get $1.2 billion.
You knew that when you were turning it down, or happenstance? Lucky that you were able to put that in front of Jeter without a naming rights sponsor.
The broadcast deal was purposeful. The naming rights, I would say it's more luck than not, because if they had hit the bid of 20 or another business had hit the bid a business where I did not have any sort of moral problem with, we would have maybe taken 10 to 12. We would have cut that deal. But the broadcast deal, we were never going to sign because Jeffrey had told me he was selling the team.
And so Scott Rothstein, the only time that you have ever turned down money, and you say your staff was mad at you for turning down that money?
It's commission. They let salespeople live on commission. When you don't approve, all corporate deals had to be approved by me over a certain amount. You know, below $100,000, cut the deal, do whatever you want. But over that amount, I'm going to look at it first and sign off on it. And it's money in people's pockets, and they've got families to feed. And, you know, there's a lot of people who work at sports teams who don't make a lot of money. And so I took it very seriously when not allowing them. It would have been a big deal. It would have been a big announcement. It would have been a big, big deal. It would have been our biggest corporate sponsor deal we ever had. I just had that, you know, that gut feeling that you have that something's wrong here. And it's because I was a lawyer and had worked in law firms and knew how law firms operated fiscally, that there was no chance that a law firm would have this amount of money.
That's interesting that you were the only one, because everybody else was taking that money all over town. It was so suspicious that all of a sudden a lawyer got into the game that aggressively, where he was not unlike Amazon. He was everywhere.
Well, hold on. Amazon actually has something, right? You can do the math and you can say, oh my God, there's another, look inside that UPS truck. Look at all those packages with that new logo on it. When you're a law firm that just puts your name on something, you're like, wow, do they have like a million clients all of a sudden who are doing a million litigations? How are they generating this revenue? With Amazon, you could easily do the math that more and more people were using their services. With law firms, it just can't scale that way.
How often do you get that gut feeling on somebody? Because you meet no shortage of slimy people. And I'm guessing that that gut feeling was based on, what is this lawyer doing spending all over town?
Yeah, I've done everything with my gut my whole career. And it's done better for me more often than it's done worse for me. My stomach has really been a great gauge for me. And sometimes I overrule my stomach. There's no doubt about that. I've done that both in the business world and in my professional life, where I think something's probably not right, but I'll do it anyway. But there's a difference. When there's freedom involved, I have a totally different scale, because as you know, the only thing that matters to me is I can hang up on this show and I can walk out the door and go wherever I want and do whatever I want. I can get on a plane to wherever I want to go to anytime I want to do it. So I will never do anything where my freedom will somehow be impugned. So doing business with Rothstein, I didn't want to be associated with anybody who's doing anything criminal for fear that somehow they would think that I knowingly took this money that was other people's money. I just would never sacrifice freedom for money, ever.
How do the Wilpons get fooled by Madoff in that circumstance?
Because they were just getting ROI. They were getting a return on their investments. They just said, wow, this is a guy who runs money well. He makes money for us. They did not realize that the money was coming from other people and that the actual investments were not making money. This was a friend of theirs. This was like a grandpa who was really good at what he did. The equivalent in sports is Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds was a great player, no matter, a Hall of Fame player. And then he does steroids, and then he becomes greater and starts hitting 70 home runs instead of 40 or 30 and just becomes bigger. He looks different, but you're still thinking to yourself, wow, he's still the great player. He's just a degree greater. That's what the deal was with Madoff. He was always good at running money, but then when his returns became so consistent for so long that even in down years in the market, he was outperforming by never having a down year, but he never returned 40%. He always returned, you know, between 7 and 15%, where you just say, wow, he's so good, but not to the point where you're like, he's doing something illegal, isn't he?
What's the movie you're reviewing for us this week?
I want to talk a serious movie called Passing. It's an Academy Award potential nominee with Ruth Negga and Tessa Thompson. And I will admit on this show, I was not aware in the early 1900s of the concept. I had never heard of passing. And this is because I'm white and privileged, but I had never heard that there were black people who tried to pass as being white people so they could have a easier life back in the early 1900s. Had you heard of that before?
No.
So it turns out that we're in the minority. Apparently people have heard of that everywhere. And this is a movie written and directed by Rebecca Hall, who is a great actress. She was in The Town. She's been in a bunch of different movies. And this is her first directorial debut. And after Mike and I did a show about Gina Davis and about women in film, I believe we did that, I don't remember when, but I think we did it in previous weeks. Who can remember? I want to support all women directors because they make good films. Passing is a very interesting film. It's a little slow, but it is a very important movie to see because it is a story of two women who are both black, one who embraces being black and lives in Harlem, one who decides to be white and marries a white guy who doesn't know that she's black and just pretends to be white her whole life until the secret somehow gets out. And it is a very subtle, interesting movie that Rebecca Hall struck the perfect tone to open a intellectual conversation about what people have had to go through for now, what's hundreds of years.
Is the film black and white?
Yes. I had not. This is how white I am. So it did not even occur to me until just now that that was purposefully done. I thought it was sort of a mood piece because it takes place before there were color movies. Wow. Okay. This is live, folks. This is a live show. And we have a chat thing, and Mike just said, I need a minute here. I absolutely missed the entire thing.
You don't see color. David Sampson does not see color.
You okay? I
mean, see you later, David. Goodbye.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text LOSE to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text LOSE to 200-300. That's LOSE to 200-300. LOSE to 200-300.